Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Deep Dive. I'm Paul. That guy's Ian. We're going to talk a little football. We got spring practices going on. And we got a lot to talk about. And if you want to be at the center of the best conversation in all of Longhorn fandom, nay, all of college football, you got to go to Join Inside Texas. Right now, they're running an amazing promo, $1 for 4 months for new members only. You heard that correctly. You probably think, what? Did he just say what I thought he said? Yes, I said it. $1 for 4 months. If you can't find a buck to get 4 months of the best info possible, I don't know what to say to you. But we're going to give you some interesting things to think about, hopefully, in this deep dive. What is it, Ian?
The next 4 months, we'll have the football spring portal open.
Yes.
All the spring practices, which I'm going to attend tomorrow. Last time I went to the spring practice, I was able to offer amazing insights.
Awesome.
Everyone is bigger than you think.
I remember you got overwhelmed a little bit.
And these people are very fast.
Yes. You noticed that college football players are good athletes. That's good.
And that they're big.
They're big. Yes. Some of them are mean.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe this time I'll see that. also, much like the Texas fan base, we have a lot of knowledgeable basketball people on the website whose interest in writing or discussing basketball waxes and wanes with the relative state of the basketball program. And right now, it's pretty interesting.
Yes, it is.
So if you like Texas basketball, for the next 4 months, you might get some pretty good basketball content. Beyond that, I can promise nothing.
And Texas baseball, kicking some major ass, unsurprisingly.
You know, that has worked out better, faster than I thought.
Yep. So good stuff. Come join us at Inside Texas. And we thank you for joining us here. Make sure you like and subscribe. We really appreciate it. It hits the mysterious and magical algorithms and brings more football fans who want to watch this show. We appreciate you. We've got a great fan base on the show too. All right, Ian. So I was on ESPN.com the other day.
Really?
Still perusing. And I saw the obligatory schlock that every journalist has to write, which is your way too early top 25 rankings. And I looked through this for 1 through 25, and you know what? I realized that there's not a single team that doesn't have major questions to answer. And there are many, many teams in the top 25 that I don't think are particularly good. And so I think, you may not know about this, Ian, but did you know that in Chinese, the character for chaos is also the one for opportunity?
I actually didn't know that. Apparently, I'm the only one in our production that doesn't know that.
All right, well, it's a platitude and a cliche, but it's actually true. I don't actually know if it's true. I can't read Chinese. It might just be something that's on bumper stickers. But that is what came to mind when I saw this. So what Ian and I are going to do is talk about we're going to hit some of the highlights or lowlights, depending on the team, of this prospective top 25. And I think it's going to reinforce the primacy of development of your roster over the next 6 months, starting in spring until fall in September. And also how important this spring portal is going to be, Ian, because the fall portal was pretty tame. Teams learned how to retain. And we're going to see some interesting bidding wars, and we're going to see some interesting movement of talent that may solidify some of these teams, may degrade some of these teams. So if you're into it, you want to run through this really quick and kind of give some top line thoughts on these teams?
Yeah, let's get it going.
All right, start us off with the Ohio State Buckeyes. Hey, they were number one last year. They have to be number one again. Isn't that how football works, Ian?
Rarely. They lost the entire D-line, I believe.
They did. Eight starters in all from defense.
They lost backup D-line to Texas, Hero Canoe. Although I don't know if he was in line to really start for them ever. Depends on the direction of Pencilier Patricia. They lost their quarterback. It's going to be like a trivia someday. Who's the only quarterback at Ohio State who actually won a national championship? Stroud? No. Haskins? No. Barrett? No. Oh, Chicago Bears guy? No. Will Howard.
And Cardell Jones.
And Cardell Jones. Yeah, yeah. Right. But under Ryan Day, yeah. But
Well, they also lost an important guy on their staff. So they brought in Patricia. They got rid of Jim Knowles, who, frankly, was proven right when he was finally given the ability to run the defense that he wanted to run. And they were a huge part of that national title run, particularly the playoff part. Their Ohio State defense played really damn well and, frankly, won the game against Texas. So we don't need to revisit that. But, you know, the thing that really struck me, look, like Texas, Ohio State's got a lot of young talent. This is a program that recruits at a high level. They develop pretty well as well. However, I think this is a very tenuous number one. I don't see them as the potential national champion, frankly, unless they have an amazing spring and an amazing spring portal. What do you think?
They look like a normal 10-2 Ohio State to me. Or they're going to overpower teams with Jeremiah Smith and whoever the new slot is on some games. And then on other games, teams are going to be able to play cover two and not get overwhelmed up front. And Julian Sain is going to look as average as their other guys looked when you actually took away his security blankets.
Yeah, the X factor, I think, for Ohio State is that it does help to have arguably the two best players in college football on offense and defense. You've got Jeremiah Smith on offense and then Downs on defense. Not a bad little foundation to build off of, but boy, there's some big glaring holes around them that need to get filled. I'm not confident that they will do so, but as we go through this list, we're not going to run into a lot of teams we're super confident about. So esteemed producer, scroll us down.
As he does that, one more thing on Ohio State. How hungry is Ryan Day after finally winning? And how hungry is that team and program? Are they like, and I've already seen like Ryan Day gave like some stock answer that went viral for a day about how they're still hungry. But usually that's, you don't want to hear that. You don't want to even hear it come up. That's like when Matt Brown would come in every offseason after 09 and he'd be like, I'm re-energized for this season. I've got fresh energy. And it's like, wait. Were you not energized last year? Is that why we sucked? Is that what happened? Is you didn't have energy?
Well, Day certainly got a monkey off of his back, and we'll see. It'll be very interesting. He certainly bought himself.
Yeah, just still have another one back there.
That's right. All right, so Texas, I think we've covered that quite a bit. We don't really need to get into it. I think the fact is, this is a tribute to the program, Ian, because the fact is, if you just look at us from an NFL draft prospect standpoint, second straight year that we get leveled by the NFL draft and putting a lot of players in the league. It's going to happen again soon. However, the level of respect that Steve Sarkisian engenders, and frankly, a little bit of the logo on the helmet and 2 years of results, frankly, just means that Texas is going to be an autofill for your top five. Fair?
Yeah. We've also noticed that the teams that are the highest in the draft turnover every year tend to be the ones that actually stay at the top.
Unless you're a Big 12 team in a developmental league, right?
Yeah.
We'll touch on that later.
Yeah.
Let's cruise on down. Penn State, I think it's going to be the same Penn State team we see every year. That may actually be good enough to win it this year, though. That's the interesting part. Here's where Notre Dame is interesting, and I want to stop here. I think this is a correct rating, and it makes sense to me. Marcus Freeman, I think, has proven to be a good coach and very charismatic. Notre Dame has a level of athlete running around on the field that we have not seen there since the 80s. And so that's interesting. And then also, this has been commented on. I don't think it can be overblown. Paying players legally has revived and restored Notre Dame.
Yeah.
By the way, it's helped Texas quite a bit too. And I think that's not going away because Freeman's got the Subway alumni fired up. Notre Dame's got a lot of high achieving alums like Texas does who have a little cash that they'll throw to the program. And their supposed weaknesses, I think they're going to actually replace them and do just fine. So what do you think? Is Notre Dame being overrated, or do you think they're just going to be hanging around for a while up in the top echelon?
I think they're going to be around for a while. There's also the TV revenue sharing angle because they are getting a ton of TV revenue. So And they've
they have SEC level revenue.
Yes. Maybe even more because they have like an ESPN deal and an NBC deal.
Yeah.
I don't know what the math. They're definitely up there.
It's really good. I think the slope of their line isn't quite as steep as like what the Big Ten and SEC are projected to get in 2 or 3 years. Because the problem with Notre Dame, and this is one of the reasons you like them in the upper echelon, is their schedule is not very challenging.
Yeah.
And while Notre Dame is its own draw, it doesn't help them when they play Stanford and NC State. So
my question is that Riley Leonard drugged this team to the finals by running the ball 10, 15, 20 times every game in the playoffs. And the Angeli kid is not that at all. And then they have Lloyd Carr's like grandson too, that may end up being the starter.
CJ Carr.
And I think he has a little bit of that, but I don't know if it's Riley Leonard level. And I also don't know if he's even going to be the starter.
So one thing to look at, Steve Angeli is actually a pretty good veteran. Whenever they've asked him to step up, he always has. And CJ Carr's kind of like big upside young guy. One thing to watch for Notre Dame, and this is tying it into the portal, if they can add a receiver or two, because they're always going to have a tight end, and we know that Greathouse had a big breakout in the playoffs. If they can add a receiver or two, which I think they're going to do, they're going to rework that offense a little bit. You're going to see them throwing the ball around a little more. They also have Jeremiah Love at running back. That helps.
Yeah. But I need to see it on the receivers because that's been true for them for like 3 years.
True. They have not had any luck developing or acquiring guys. So we shall see. Let's keep going down, esteemed producer.
Georgia.
I don't care. We kind of know the dynamics there. They got to replace a lot of guys. It's kind of like Ohio State and Texas, right?
Yep.
Keep going.
They probably will.
Yeah, probably will. Oregon, similar deal. They killed it in the fall portal. They'll probably do it again. I think they're going to take a little step back.
Yeah.
Certainly at quarterback, going from Dylan Gabriel to Dante Moore. If you didn't watch Dante Moore at UCLA, little shaky. So we shall see. Oregon certainly has a very quarterback-friendly offense, and they're going to surround them with talent. But we'll see about the Ducks. Keep going. This team we're going to talk about.
Yes.
Believe it or not, Dabo, I think rumors of his demise may have been exaggerated. So something happened in the fall that has not happened at Clemson in a long time. Ian, do you know what that was?
They had blue chip receivers. They were actually really good.
Yep. Blue chip receivers, an experienced quality college quarterback in Cade Klubnik. He's finally leveled up. Certainly showed that against Texas.
That was kind of surprise too, right? Because senior year of high school and freshman and sophomore year at Clemson, I was like, never say never. Guys get better. But this guy is not it.
Nope.
And now he is it. He is awesome.
Well, and this is interesting because Clemson's historical pathway to relevance is high-level mobile quarterback play paired with elite receivers that terrify you.
Yeah.
That is the Clemson blueprint. They've never been great on the offensive line, and this team won't be great on the offensive line.
Nope.
They also pair that, their best teams, with a defense. Last year, before we played Clemson, I did a big scout on them, and I was like, hey, I've got something I can't explain. Clemson's got a bunch of good players on defense, and they're bad on defense. And we played them, and that was exactly proven true. They were mystified by outside zone, Ian.
It was bad.
We ran for 292 yards on them, running the same outside zone play to both blue and
– sacks, too.
Yes.
It was over 300 without the sacks.
That's true. And so that was a mirage, as was proven the next 2 weeks when we played Arizona State and Ohio State. But the famously loyal Dabo Swinney said, look, this ain't working. So they brought in Tom Allen, who was the defensive coordinator at Penn State. Very steady hand, a pro's pro. That defense is going to level up. Their offense is going to level up. Clemson has a very favorable schedule to include their opener against LSU, who famously finds ways to lose their openers against good opponents. And that's at Clemson in Death Valley. So I think this Clemson team is being underrated. I would be buying low, relatively speaking, on Dabo Swinney and Clemson.
You know, the strongest indicator that this is a team to look out for is that under weaknesses, it says running back.
Yes, that's right. And you know what? They brought in a really good freshman running back, and they converted that big wide receiver to running back who played against us. And that guy looked quite good.
Yeah.
And by the way, Clemson's going to run the ball because you're overplaying their passing game. That's why Garrett Riley's going to hand the ball off. So running back is the least of their concerns. Look, everyone would take Jeremiah Love. That's fine. But if that's your weakness, Ian, you just made a great point. I want to make a great point to you about the guy you need in your corner when you buy a house. Mm. He is not the running back of this process. He is the quarterback, the offensive line, and the wide receivers. That's Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Why Gabe? He is absolutely passionate about helping people realize their dream of home ownership or getting people optimized into the right house. If they're upgrading, downgrading, kids have moved out, etc. Call Gabe. He's really sharp, over 20 years in the industry, former National Merit Scholar. He's got a law degree. This guy knows every angle. He is more than just some quote monkey. He's a guy that helps you fashion a solution to realize your dreams. Call him, 832-557-1095. Tell him that Paul and Ian sent you, and he will take extra special care of you. Thank you for supporting the show. All right. Back to the grind. Let's keep going. LSU, we'll keep going. Okay. Here's where we enter the national media doesn't understand Big 12 developmental cycles phase of the top 25. BYU had a wonderful year last year. They really surprised. They won a lot of close games. And they kind of peaked out in a development cycle. They're going to bring back some guys who are headliners like Jake Retzlaff, but they're attributing the success of that team to things that didn't drive the success of that team, namely their defensive line. Look at that weakness. They had a surprisingly good defensive line last year. They're all gone. They aren't just going to be replaced. They think this is an SEC team. They think this is Texas. This is a Big 12 team. Just as I predicted TCU when they went to the playoffs and they had eight players drafted against Michigan, or actually they lost that title game against Georgia. They beat Michigan. I was like, hey, TCU is going to win 7 games if they're lucky. And people are like, oh, you're insane. And everyone had them in the top 15, top 20. And then lo and behold, they suck. The helmet doesn't matter if the player is different. So they're doing this with BYU. I don't have any grudge against BYU. I wish them nothing but success. But let's keep going, Connor, because you're going to see a number of these types of teams. South Carolina, we'll see. They've got to be driven more by their offense this year. Iowa State, like, same deal, man. I know that they bring back their quarterback. That's great. Keep going, Connor.
He's pretty good, but Jaden Higgins was really big. And Jalen Noel's gone also. Is that what it said?
That's right, both receivers.
Yeah.
That's the best receiver core they've had in years.
Ian's number one rule for college quarterback.
Have good receivers.
The receivers make the passer.
That's right. Keep going.
Alabama.
Illinois.
Alabama's going to be a lot better than 12.
Yeah, so here's
year
the thing.
Year two with Kalen DeBoer, no. They're going to fly up this list.
Expand on that.
Well, they barely knew what they were doing on defense last year. And Jalen Milroe was an awful, awful fit. They had like two or three guys that are going to turn out to be NFL receivers, including Ryan Williams. And then they had a running back throwing them the ball. And then it says under strength defensive front. So apparently they got a lot of big guys back. And those guys are, even for Alabama, those guys are hard to just turn over every year.
If you believe in DeBoer, you've got to think Alabama has some value outside of the top 10.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going.
Do you believe in the play?
Function of schedule. Arizona State. Again, I'm a believer in Kenny Dillingham. I think he's lost some guys. Let's also see how Arizona State defends the portal in the spring.
They better raise a lot of money for Jordan Tyson if they don't want him to end up in LSU or somewhere.
Or somewhere closer to home. So, weakness running back. Again, please ignore. I love Cam Scadabo. He's great. But I love Dillingham. Like, we've already agreed we need Arizona State to go 6-6 this year so that he's unpalatable to be hired by OU when they fire Venables. And then Arizona State will rebound in 2026 and go 12-2 again.
I have a new hope, which is that Jim Nagy makes OU unpalatable for Kenny Dillingham.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he really the shadow government at OU? All right, keep going.
Kanye Udoh. They're going to be awesome running the ball. They have, like, the whole line back. They have Sam Levitt holding the backside on a quarterback option. Anybody sleeping on Arizona State's running game is totally doesn't understand college football.
SMU, they'll be competitive in the ACC based on the fact that they care about football and they've got a bunch of Texas players. So keep going. Kansas State, again, another Big 12 team. I'm not saying that any one of these individual Big 12 teams won't have a good year. I'm saying it's just as likely some random Big 12 team at the top of their development cycle is the team that wins the league.
So last year I shorted Kansas State and I got a bunch of Kansas State fans in my mentions telling me how stupid I was. But I was like, they let Will Howard go to start the Avery Johnson session, not because Howard sucks, but because they wanted to build, they wanted it the year before the year with Avery Johnson. And now it's the year. I still don't know if that guy can stay healthy. He is about as skinny as I am. But if he does, I do like Kansas State.
Yeah, I never like to see they need DBs for any college football team, especially when you're at that level.
It says they added like 4 or 5 transfers, and they've tended to be pretty good at that.
Yeah, they have a pretty good eye for finding hidden prizes. All right, keep going.
We'll see.
Indiana. All right. So they do bring back their defense, which is very important.
Okay.
Indiana's just got a very high floor, and they've got a good coach. Problem with Indiana is if they play good teams, it gets exposed. The good news for Indiana, there are some really good teams in the Big Ten, but not many. So you're not going to run into a ton of them. They also have to replace their quarterback, who was really good, Curtis Fork. They're replacing him with the guy from Cal. So that'll be interesting. Keep going.
They have a great shot to be like 10-2 with blowout losses to Ohio State and Oregon.
Yes. They're probably more 9-3-ish, but yeah, I agree with you. Florida Gators.
Too low.
That's the thing. So if you see a vulnerable top 25 where you don't see a dominant team, find a team with the right traits and the right mix and expect them to be the riser, just like we did with Clemson. Now, I'll say this, Ian. They have another brutal schedule.
Yeah.
But if we think that the overall universe of college football is a little diminished, the names may not mean quite as much. Is that fair?
Yeah. Plus, I believe they're Florida State, Miami duo that looked intimidating last year and was sort of intimidating in the season does not look as bad going into next year. No Cam Ward, and God knows what Florida State will be.
A bunch of mercenaries. Who knows?
So, yeah, we don't even know if it's a coin flip.
So one thing I do want to point out to y'all, they improved at the line of scrimmage on both sides as the year progressed, and they've added talent there, which is important. DJ Lagway is a freak in terms of his deep ball and just his size. He's Ben Roethlisberger. You can't really get him on the ground very easily. And the weakness, wide receiver, important to note, we're going to be competing with the Florida Gators for some guys this spring. Another thing to note, Billy Napier does a great job of selling the vision of the program to his donors, to his Medicis. And they're going to have money, and they're going to solve that wide receiver problem one way or another.
They're recruiting. It was one of the most blatant examples I've ever seen of this. They're recruiting, and how, what people said about their recruiting capacity flipped on a dime when he started playing DJ Lagway halfway through the year, and then started being able to say, this is where we're going. And then all of a sudden, Florida's in the running for Jamie French and all these top prospects.
It fostered a lot of belief.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree 100%. So Florida is a team that I think we should focus and pay attention to. Keep on rolling, Connor. By the way, that's a game when we play them, it's going to be circled.
Yeah.
They're pissed off about what we did to them. They have us in Gainesville. They're going to try to repeat it. Tennessee will be interesting. We'll keep going.
They need Nico to be a lot better, and they need Heupel to figure out the flyover.
Louisville, they're going to be highly mercenary dependent. Michigan could be very interesting, right? They're doing their version of DJ Lagway, right?
Yep.
We'll see.
I am going to sell.
Yeah. I think they're going to miss Jim Harbaugh. I'll just leave it at that.
And all of the top coaches that he took with him.
Yes. Aggies, probably right.
I want to go higher, but it's Texas A&M, so.
Yeah, they'll do Aggie stuff, right?
Yeah, they should be. I think Marcel Reed, after an entire offseason, is the guy. With all those linemen back and Colin Klein's offense and some weapons at receiver.
Well, so, you know, they added a guy. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he's from NC State, named Kevin Concepcion.
Oh, yeah.
Really good receiver, and he's great after the catch, which is really jibes with Marcel Reed's skill set.
Yeah. I kind of think they're going to be – in their defense last year, they didn't even know what they were doing, Paul.
No, they didn't. They got Craver, the Mississippi State speed wide receiver, too.
Ooh.
So that's helpful. So they got the yak guy, and they got the bomb guy. That's good.
I'm going to have to think hard about this offseason because they – some of their traits are like, I need to see what their D-line looks like.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I thought their D-line underperformed their talent last year.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to kind of see what they have waiting in the wings.
I think they have maybe a better group this year, though, just because they'll have like more clear fits and roles. And they had some guys last year that seemed like their hearts weren't in the glory of Texas A&M football.
I agree. Miami, probably a top 10 roster, but 23 ranking is probably correct.
Who's their quarterback now? Oh, yeah, of course. That's right.
What?
Carson Beck, I forgot.
Yeah, it's Carson Beck.
I kind of like Carson Beck. Every new offseason story about Carson Beck makes me just want to, like, throw everything I see on film now and then out the window and just be like, there's no way this guy can get it done.
Yeah, the film you need to be watching for Carson Beck is on Instagram.
Yeah.
Boise State, whatever. I mean, you have to put in an obligatory group of five team. You might as well say Boise State, I guess. Whatever. Ole Miss. All right. Lane Kiffin, he's won 10 games or more in 3 of the last 4 years at Ole Miss, which deserves your respect at that program. However, last year was their window. They could not fit through the window, Ian. They blew it. They have a reasonable schedule for the SEC, if you look at it. I think there's going to be a pretty substantial drop-off in Oxford.
Maybe a good tell would have been how many jobs Kiffin pushed for to try to get last offseason and which ones will be available next offseason.
Well, this could be a whole other show, but last year in college football was incredibly stable. in terms of desirable jobs, right?
Wasn't necessarily what we thought was going to happen, though. Because a lot of schools were like, you know what, with NIL, we'd be better not spending the buyout money.
Yeah. That said, you're going to see some major jobs coming open at the end of this year. Big jobs. I'm not sure I can compare to like the time when LSU, USC, Notre Dame all came open, you know, that area. But I am talking like Auburn, OU, Florida. Like, I mean, there's some big potential jobs that it's kind of nut cutting time. You got to perform or they're going to make a change.
Would you leave Ole Miss for Oklahoma?
The fact that I'd even pause now is proof that the new environment is different.
Yeah.
I still would.
I don't know. I need to know what.
Could you imagine the ludicrousness of asking that question 20 years ago?
Yeah, 5 years ago.
I mean, you should be pointed at and laughed, right?
Yeah.
But now you have to kind of go, huh, what is OU truly as a job right now with NIL, with recruiting, you know, not having a natural recruiting base? Obviously, they've never had a natural recruiting base and they've overcome it. But just as Notre Dame has benefited from not paying players under the table, certain programs have not benefited that you can no longer establish a competitive advantage by paying players under the table.
I need to know also, though, if I were going to go there, I need to know who's in charge. I need Nagy to report to me. That's it. That's how that relationship works.
Yeah.
I want to know how long Castiglione is in this for.
Yeah.
Or did a new guy get fired? The new guy get brought in to hire me? And what's his? Usually, I feel like one of the strengths of Oklahoma is that when they have a guy that's good, they circle the schooners around him and they squeeze every resource they have into making that guy's vision happen.
Yep.
And right now, the Sooner Schooners are all going off in different directions, and that makes them not scary at all.
Agreed. I mean, the fact is we just went through a top 25, and OU's not in it.
Crazy.
That is crazy. What's also interesting is this is the first time in college football where we're seeing the true NFL dynamic of an NFL GM being more powerful possibly than the coach.
Yeah.
We don't know that to be true. That's just
in Oklahoma.
Well, we don't know that for certain, but
I think it depends on which guy the AT&T dude trusts more, because apparently he's running the show.
Well,
he's going to end up trusting Nagy more than he's going to trust Brent.
Well, so that's the thing. In the NFL, the Bill Belichick model is not the common model. The common model is there's a head coach and he coaches the team, and there's a GM and the GM picks the team. Yeah. And the GM interacts with the owner every day while the coach is interacting with the team. Yeah. And guess who builds a relationship with the GM?
Yeah.
The owner. So OU, if it is that situation that we're speculating,
it is.
I am not going to coach there unless I'm a young up-and-comer and I'm willing to cede that this guy will build out my team and my job is just to coach it. Or you just view him as another layer of management. You know, you're still working for the AD, right?
I have so many thoughts on this. We should save it for another show.
We should. Yeah.
But yeah.
But it's the first time in college football that I know of that we see that dynamic.
Well, another Chan J. Araya, CBS Sports, noted recently that Andrew Luck was the one that made the call. On Troy Taylor. At least ostensibly, he's the one that made the call.
Yeah.
That's the first time a general manager is firing a coach. Obviously, it's a special circumstance, but we're all looking at it, and we're all looking at Venables. And we're like, is it going to be Nagy that comes out and says we've decided to go in a new direction?
So it will be Castiglione. Like, he's not a figurehead at OU. He actually hires and fires, right?
I'm not sure if that's true anymore, man.
You think he's been cut out?
I mean, it kind of looks like maybe he has.
That's wild. Because that guy's like one of the most esteemed ADs. He's regarded as one of the ADs that like gets it. But OU fans don't feel like he gets it.
Well, they've been they've been stumbling so bad through the NIL transition, the portal maybe not the portal transition, but Lincoln Riley totally blindsided them.
The Lincoln Riley thing is the most blindsiding thing that's ever happened.
But even I was making jokes all year that the dude looked like he was going to bail on him.
Well, I don't
they
know.
Were like, they were like, no.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but when COVID was happening, Lincoln Riley was like, cancel the season.
Yeah.
Cancel the season. And I was like, that's not about his epidemiological expertise. That guy doesn't like his team and he's scared to play. And by the way, they went out with not a great team and won the Big 12 anyway, which was purely on Lincoln Riley's offensive coaching. And as I've said, when Riley left OU, he gave them the disease, but he left with the cure.
Yeah.
Right? The disease was he didn't build out balanced, good teams. He had a great offense and he coached his way through it in the Big 12. So when he left all the disease and he took the cure with him. Maybe USC's finding out the same. We'll see. But there's a lot to find out. There's a lot to find out at Inside Texas. Hey, y'all need to go join $1. We'll get you 4 months. It's a phenomenal deal. Make the investment. It's going to be well worth your time. You're going to find a new place to talk Longhorn football. Ian, thanks for joining. A lot of interesting things we talked about. We'll do this again next week for the deep dive. I'm Paul. That's Ian. Thank you.
Happy to be on the Paul Wadlington Show.